This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, March 15th. I'm Evan Osnos, filling in for Dorothy Wickenden. On Tuesday morning, President Trump announced on Twitter that he was replacing Secretary of State Rex Tillerson with Mike Pompeo, the current CIA director. According to a spokesperson from the State Department, Tillerson only learned the news when an aide showed him the president's tweet. Later that morning, the president spoke with reporters on the White House lawn, said that he had made the decision to fire Tillerson because of differences over major policy issues.
We got along actually quite well, but we disagreed on things. When you look at the Iran deal, I think it's terrible. I guess it was okay. I wanted to either break it or do something, and he felt a little bit differently. So we were not really thinking the same. With Mike Pompeo, we have a very similar thought process. I think it's going to go very well.
Dexter Filkins joins me to discuss the changes at the top of the State Department and the CIA and where the Trump administration is heading on foreign policy and national security. Dexter, as you know, in Washington, the view of Tillerson is not positive. He is often described as one of the least successful secretaries of state. He leaves his department with very low morale. His relationship with the president obviously collapsed. You published a profile of Tillerson last fall. Even then, it seemed as if his days were numbered, and you captured that sense very well. Do you think that the verdict on him is fair?
I think it's fair. Tillerson was, for all of his differences with the president, he was, I think, faithfully carrying out the main thrust of what Trump wanted, which is a kind of diplomatic retreat from the world, and a retreat from all the international organizations and institutions and relationships that have been the centerpiece of American foreign policy since the end of the Second World War, whether it's the UN or NATO or the World Trade Organization. Trump's general instinct was to walk away from that or to disassociate ourselves from those arrangements. And I think Tillerson was, however reluctantly, was doing that. And the principal way that he set about to do it was walking in the door. He proposed cutting the State Department's budget by 30%. Those budget cuts haven't gone through, but it has hugely demoralized American diplomats across the globe. Hundreds of diplomats, very senior people, have left. It's been a terrible year for American diplomacy.
So one of the puzzles, then, as you say, he was doing what the president wanted him to do in some respects. And, you know, at the outset, you would have said these two seem like natural partners. They're both old school businessmen. They both come with large personal fortunes. So why didn't it work? What happened in his relationship with the president that failed?
Well, my sense in reporting the piece that I did was that Tillerson may have gone about carrying out Trump's wishes, but he didn't, deep down, he didn't really agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently fought very hard to keep as much money for the department as he could, but he lost. And he certainly didn't agree with when, Trump would trash NATO, or he would threaten war with North Korea, or threaten to abrogate the nuclear arms agreement with Iran. I think those things made Tillerson very uncomfortable. And you mentioned at the top of the broadcast Iran, and I think these are the areas where Mike Pompeo is probably going to bring a big difference.
Before we get to Pompeo, one other question about Tillerson, because he's sort of a cipher, really, to the public. He very little contact with the press. He's came at this job mostly known for being the CEO of ExxonMobil. He'd risen to the top of this vast enterprise. I think people assume that he would have obviously great capability, at least running a big organization. You've seen him in action. You've watched him work, deal with other people. What did you find when you saw that? What surprised you most?
Well, I think he was kind of doomed from the start, because the Trump White House said anybody that signed one of these letters that declared I'll never work for Trump, that was the whole, or virtually the entire, Republican foreign policy establishment. Trump declared essentially that anyone who said that or signed one of those papers is not going to work in this administration. that just crippled Tillerson. I mean, there was no one to go to. And so I think as we speak, 8 of the top 9 jobs in the State Department are empty. Hmm. They can't find anybody. From the get-go, he was hamstrung. If you couple that with the approach that Tillerson brought to the job, which is, I'm going to run the State Department, and I'm going to be America's chief diplomat in pretty much the same way that I ran Exxon, which is I'm going to do it privately. I don't have to hold a press conference every time I travel to a foreign country. I don't have to tell people what I'm doing. I don't have to bring the press along. I'm going to do this all very quietly, just traveling abroad and meeting other people like me and making deals in closed rooms. That doesn't work in 2018. It just doesn't. And, I mean, we live in a democracy, and people want to know. Those two things together really, I think, doomed him from the get-go.
So now we've got Mike Pompeo coming in, and very much as you just described, he cuts a very different profile than Rex Tillerson. He's not the CEO who was meeting behind closed doors over the course of his career. He's a congressman from Kansas. He was elected in the Tea Party wave in 2010. He's very close to Trump politically. How do you think his approach to this job is going to differ from Tillerson's?
Well, it's hard to say because on one hand, he's a hawk. He talks very tough, particularly he's been very tough on Iran, very tough on North Korea. He, if you remember when he was a congressman, he was very involved in the Benghazi hearings. And on the other hand, his tenure at the CIA was pretty quiet. And as I understand it, the institution and people institution, they liked him. And I think he respected them and they respected him and it was going pretty well. So he wasn't, say, like Tillerson or one of other Trump's appointments who came in and said, I'm going to wreck this place and I'm going to turn it upside down and I'm going to cut the budget. And so in that way, he may come into the State Department feeling like he needs to re-energize the department.
Yeah, you hear, and I probably hear the same sorts of things you do, which is that on the plus side, morale's pretty good at the CIA because Pompeo came in and chucked out some of the reorganizational plans that had been in the works, which the rank and file didn't like. And then there is, on the negative side, this concern that he was more willing than previous directors to go out publicly and talk about politics. I mean, he would talk about issues like Russia, like Iran, in a way that mapped very closely onto the political language of the president. How do you think he navigates these two different constituencies? Now, he's got, on the one hand, the foreign policy community that he's got to represent, and on the other hand, of course, he's got one customer. He's got the president. And if he's learned anything over the last 13, 14 months, it's that you have to keep that guy happy or you end up on the outs.
Yeah, it's an inherent dilemma, I think, for anybody coming into that job, because as you say, you have the president as a boss. He's very volatile. He's very vocal. And on the other hand, you have the diplomats who make up the State Department in embassies across the globe. And they are, by nature, cautious. They're soft-spoken. They're circumspect. They're very thoughtful. They're very careful. They are the antithesis of Donald Trump. And so Pompeo has to navigate between those two. And so it's going to be quite a challenge for him.
One more question on Pompeo. We've talked about one of the key points on which Pompeo and Trump see eye to eye, and that's on the Iran deal. They're both very skeptical of the Iran deal. They've talked about scrapping it. Does a Secretary of State have the power to do that? Is that the sort of thing that he could actually do now?
Well, I think the ultimate decision on the Iran deal is going to be made by Trump. It could go either way right now. And so Tillerson supported the agreement. He didn't want to abrogate it. He and I spoke about this. He didn't like the Iran agreement. And Secretary Mattis feels the same way. They didn't like it. They wouldn't have negotiated it that way. They thought we could have gotten a better agreement. But it's the agreement we have. And it limits the Iranian nuclear program. And Pompeo, I think, it comes in much more skeptical than that. The question's going to be, can he tip the balance inside the White House when it comes time to make a decision whether or not to keep the agreement? And he could, so in that respect, he could be very, very crucial.
There's a third player in this drama, and you've also written about her. That's Gina Haspel, who is going to be nominated as the new director of the CIA to succeed Pompeo. You've written about her quite a bit. Tell me how she first came onto your radar screen.
Well, she first came out on my radar screen when Trump appointed her to be deputy director of the CIA, which does not require Senate confirmation. I just went back at that point and started looking at her history. She oversaw some of the most controversial programs that the CIA undertook after 9/11. Waterboarding, rendition, the really, really hard, harsh treatment of terrorism suspects. They're tortured by any other name. And to me, what's interesting is that when President Obama came into office, he essentially decided he wasn't going to try to prosecute any of the people who took part in these programs. But even more than that, he didn't really want to have a debate about it. And so there really hasn't been a full national debate about what happened. And what's interesting to me now is that we might actually have it. At the end of the day, the Senate is controlled by the Republican Party, and I think, you know, ultimately she'll probably, or she's likely at this point, to get confirmed. But she's going to face some very, very tough questions.
I think Dianne Feinstein, who at one point actually blocked her promotion to become head of clandestine operations, was quoted after this nomination as CIA director saying that they're going to have, in a sense, a very serious conversation because they've talked a lot since that first time when she blocked her promotion. But as Feinstein said, there's a difference between being number two, which Feinstein allowed her to be, and being number one. So there may be significant Democratic resistance, too, is my guess.
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of Democratic senators who are going to push very hard when Gina Haspel comes up for confirmation.
So, Dex, if we step back for a second from some of these personnel dramas, we're now entering the second quarter of Trump's second year in office, and we're beginning to see perhaps the contours of what he thinks and what he does when it comes to foreign policy and national security. I mean, he came to the job, as we all know, with no experience on the subject. He'd never been in government, never been in uniform. And now he oversees a national security state, which is involved in half a dozen conflicts around the world. And he's preparing to sit down with Kim Jong-un for this extraordinarily complex diplomatic encounter. Have you begun to form a sense, Dex, of what really matters to this president when it comes to national security, when it comes to foreign policy? He can be all over the place. But are we beginning to get a sense of the Trump doctrine to the degree that that exists?
That's a very good question. I think if there is a Trump doctrine, I would say it has two parts. The first one is we will favor strength and the potential to use military force over diplomacy. I think we've seen that in everything that Trump has done. If you just look at the budget numbers, Trump came in and tried to gut the State Department at the same time while giving an enormous budget increase to the Pentagon. At the same time, and if I think North Korea is a good example of this, there does seem to be in Trump's mind an idea. If we're going to make a deal, the best way to do that is to scare the hell out of your adversary and to credibly threaten force and to make them shake. And that way you can get the best deal. And I think we're going to see that with North Korea, and we're going to see that with Iran. You know, I think if you're going to play that kind of game, it's pretty dangerous. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's a very risky game. He's playing chicken.
So you're saying it's going to be a quiet, restful road ahead.
Indeed.
Dexter, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Em.
Dexter Filkins is a staff writer and the author of The Forever War. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app. And find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review The Political Scene on Apple Podcasts. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron and Hannah Wilentz for NewYorker.com. I'm Evan Osnos.